And we're back! I'm feeling good today. Oh, I'm feeling good today. Okay. Hi, I'm Julia.
Hi, I'm Lex.
We're back.
Yeah. Wee. Bear, bear, bear,
bear. There it is. It had to happen.
I've been waiting for so long.
You've had this just like repressed large amount of air horns in your soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of air horn in this episode because it's been stifled for so long.
This is now an air horn exclusive podcast. We are only going to give you various air horns for your various moods.
Just sound effects. I'm trying to become the next Rhys Darby. It's fine.
Who is Rhys Darby?
In the show that is now 92% of my personality, Our Flag Means Death, he plays Steed Bonnet. And did I start watching some of his stand-up? Yeah, from like the early 2000s? Absolutely. And he does a lot of like sound effect bits. And he's really good.
I love it.
He's really great at sound effects with his mouth, in case that was not clear. What?
No, with his butthole.
He could be. I don't know. I haven't fallen into that side of the internet yet.
Have you done stand-up before?
I haven't. And when I was a kid, I used to obsess over stand-up. Like, I would watch all the time. I was like, I want to be a stand-up comic.
Yes.
I don't know so much now. Sometimes I'll have like these inklings like, yeah, I want to do stand up, but it's never been a huge draw for me. I think I just really enjoy watching stand up. I think it's so fun when it's done well.
Yeah. It's incredible. Incredible writers. I think that's why I admire stand up comics, because comics or comedians, people who do stand up. I appreciate them because at their core, they're good writers.
Yeah. If their jokes are good. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to be. Yeah. I think that's why I loved it so much was that, especially when people could weave together a really brilliant story. Mm-hmm. Like, I love Eddie Izzard. Like, Dress to Kill is fantastic because just the way she weaves jokes back and forth together, and then the callbacks are so beautiful.
I just
think that special is still holds up so well, and I think it was filmed in like, God, I want to say like 2000, something like that. So it's over 20 years old, and it's still like perfection.
I love that your choice is like very this person who is like kind of very glamorous, and my go-to stand-up comedian is Bert Kreischer, who is like a Florida party boy who does his stand-up with his shirt off and his like beer belly out. That's just the type of man I'm attracted to. I can't help it.
Just the like Adam Sandler's of the world, you know?
Yes, precisely.
That's fine.
Yeah. Well, we're back.
Yeah,
we missed us. I don't know if anyone missed us. I missed you.
I missed us. Yeah, I miss you. You know what? I don't care about anybody else. Just you. This is for us, baby.
That's okay. The rest of this show is just air horns and us gushing over each other.
Yeah. Slumber party vibes.
Yeah. What? I mean, I am in my closet. There are pillows next to me. I'm not wearing a bra. I'm nice. Very much slumber party vibes. Yes, 100%.
Oh, I'm in my bedroom, not wearing pants. So there you go.
Between the two of us, we don't have a full outfit on, and I'm proud. No, but we took a much needed break. You know, we would show up to the mic every week nonstop, and we've had really amazing guests, and I'm so happy that we get to do this, that we get to show up and just talk into the ether. And it's always so fun when people talk back and like leave us voicemails and send us DMs. But I think we were kind of feeling the grind a little bit.
Yeah.
And I know you can speak more to this probably, but you are like an audio wizard is what I call you. And so you were like, I want to go back to some of our earlier episodes where I was still trying to figure out sound and editing and like mm-hmm. do some remasters, which a bunch of people reached out to me and they were like, what the hell is a like, what are you doing? What is a remaster? So Audio Wizard, will you please let us know what the P&E has been up to this past month?
So like remasters and re-edits for the most part. And I will say, okay, I learned many things while doing this. First of all, a lot of the remasters that we did, the original file, this is such a like newbie move. I only saved the audio that was compressed down. So like Jose, for example, in the interview with Jose, like his audio file and my audio file had been compressed down to one audio file. So like there was no way to edit them separately anymore because I goofed that up. So I've learned, and now we're keeping everybody's tracks separate, and at least save separately in case we ever want to do remasters again. But the whole purpose for me was like, there are some where I knew the audio quality wasn't that great. Maybe there was a lot of background noise. Episodes were really long and the conversations are great, but like, how can we clip it down a little bit more to make a more concise story?
So and a more pleasurable listening experience.
Yeah. Cause I know, like, I think people can kind of fall on either spectrum. Like, I love, there are certain podcasts that when I see like an episode is almost 3 hours long, I get so excited. I'm like, hell yeah. Like the story is probably going to be great, or they're going to go on goofy tangents. But those are podcasts that I've been listening to for years.
Yeah.
But I also am like somebody who I'm always listening to podcasts. Like that's all I ever do, really. Yeah. But I know there are other people who are like, oh man, like 3 hours, that's super long. Like that's going to take me a week and a half to get through because they listen to it in bite-sized chunks. So finding that like good balance of having a fun conversation, talking about all of the things we want to touch on, making sure it's still vulnerable, but also like kind of keeping it at a manageable length is really important. And that's something that the two of us have challenged ourselves with over the past year. So that was another thing that I wanted to make sure I did with those. And it's a good reason for us to be like, hey, you guys like this episode. Here it is again, cleaned up a little bit more. Yeah. And I'm going to go back to sleep. Okay, bye. Like, so, yeah.
Well, they sound great.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I think it's just a cool learning opportunity, too, because it's like now I know going forward, you know, we can save certain content. Stuff that doesn't make it to the episodes, we can always save for a bonus episode, or it's just easier to like clean stuff up. So,
yeah. I also love one of my favorite things to do is if I'm on Instagram and I see someone that I really, really love, I've been following them for a while. A prime example is Heather McMahon, amazing comedian, actress, really blowing up right now. And she, like, I would watch her content and I would watch her stories and the stuff in her feed. And my favorite thing to do is to go as far back as I possibly can to see where, like, someone with millions of followers who seems to have their shtick or their type of humor or their type of, you know, whatever it is, they have it so refined, to go back to see where they were a few years ago. Yeah. I love that. And I feel like there is this impetus for a lot of us to, if something doesn't hit on social media, right? Like if we don't get a certain number of likes or whatever, we'll take it down. Or as we start to progress and get better and get more polished and to like find ourselves in our groove, there's this, okay, I have to like take down all the stuff that wasn't hitting, or like all the rough, quote unquote, rough drafts before I found my flow. And I'm one of the things I'm very adamant about, both for us and for the Makeup Artist Chronicle, is I never want us to take that stuff down, because I don't want people to just see where we end up. I want people who are hopeful, who maybe want to start a podcast or start, you know, whatever, to be able to go back into the archives and be like, oh, okay, yeah, they started out really shitty too. And they like learned on air how to like find their groove. So,
yeah.
We're getting there.
Yeah. It's, I also love, like, I'll do this with friends sometimes. Same thing, like, go way, way back. I love doing it with celebrities, and you see, like, you know, in 2011, they were using the same, like, sepia filter that all of us were using. And posting, like, out-of-focus photos of birthday cakes and shit. I think it's so funny. But, yeah, it is – it's really important to, like, see your growth, and that was something that when I when we first started this, because you'd been doing Makeup Artist Chronicle for a while, you said, like, it's okay to make mistakes, like, we'll figure it out. And honestly, that's truly the best advice for anybody who's interested in whether it's a podcast, streaming, whatever it may be, is like, you just kind of figure it out as you go, and you take notes and you correct as you go, because like, to me, it's like, of course, why wouldn't I have saved, like, audio tracks separately at the very beginning, right? But it also made sense because it was like, oh, well, this is – this episode's done. Like, you know, post it. It's fine. But now I can see, like, oh, like, there's an opportunity to either clean it up, or maybe there was stuff that got edited out that we would love to have again. Like, there's all kinds of things. So
– I think it also depends on, like, a person's learning style, right?
Yeah.
Like, there were students – if you go back to being in school, right, there were always students who were the good students, right? They would show up. They would be organized. They would learn really well theoretically. They would be able to then take that theoretical knowledge and apply it into action. And I always felt like, oh my God, I like, I'm such a sucky student. I can't do that. Like, I recently have been diagnosed with ADHD, so that may have something to do with it. But I remember, like, sitting in school, just being like, I'm bored. I don't want to listen to this person lecture. I don't want to read this out of the book. Like, I want to put it into practice or learn in a way that applies to me. And so I didn't realize that I had a different learning style, and I tried to make myself fit into the box of, like, the good student. And then I realized that the only way that I learn is by doing the thing, being very, very uncomfortable at the beginning because I suck and I fall flat on my face and I make mistakes and I embarrass myself and I beat myself up and I, like, just kind of spiral out of control in 2 weeks. It's always 2 weeks where I'm like, I'm going to be masochistic and do this thing and keep pushing through because it's what I want to do, but I'm failing so miserably right now and I'm so embarrassed. And then eventually I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, no, I've learned from this. So I have a very, like, masochistic learning style that I need experiential knowledge and I need to be able to make those mistakes in order to learn what not to do. And so I think it depends on, like, a person's learning style. Like, if anyone wants to start a podcast or a YouTube channel or, you know, write a novel or whatever, you can read all of the guides and the books and watch all the videos and get all the knowledge. And maybe that's how you learn. And then you can take all of that and really craft a strategy and put it into place and create something that from the jump is just what you want it to be. Odds are, it probably, the end form won't be what you started with, but maybe you feel a little more comfortable with that theoretical knowledge. Maybe you don't fit into that box. Maybe you are more like me where you just need to go out and, like, record your very first episode in your closet, which now I'm back in a closet, so full circle. But, you know, I have an official, like, I have a $200 mic, and I have a MacBook, and I have a 4K camera, and I have a ring light, and I have, like, all these things versus my very first episode of the Makeup Artist Chronicle more than 3 years ago was in my closet in the dark, like, rolled into a ball and just, like, talking into my phone, into the voice memo app, just being like, hello, is anyone out there? I'm a makeup artist and this is what beauty means to me. So, like, it was very horrible quality. It was, I was very much, I put a lot of pressure on myself. I beat myself up a lot of, like, false stops and starts and ums and going too fast and going too slow and all of these things. And I needed to go through that. And then I also needed to do the very difficult thing of listening back to what I put out, which is so painful. Like, I feel like actors are like, I don't want to watch my work. I don't want to watch myself act. Like, you don't watch your own work. And I was like that for so long with the podcast. And now I'm like, no, I have to, because I need to know. It's like an athlete watching their tape. I need to know what works and what doesn't, and do more of like what I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, it's like going back and seeing your work, like what you were saying, you can figure out too, like maybe the thing that does really well is something that you're really passionate about talking about, right? Like,
yes.
For example, the episodes that have done the best for us are generally the ones where it's like you and I talking about the things that we really love. And then it's, yeah, those are the ones I really like seem to do the best, is like the ones where we've talked about the things that we give a shit about, because it's coming from a more genuine place and it's coming from something that means something very deeply to us. So,
yes,
you know, people can hear that and they can see it too. And that's all I have to say about that, because I don't know where it's going.
Well, most of those episodes are like, I'm sad. I'm emo. I know. This is why.
Everything fucking sucks, but you know what?
And everyone else is like, yeah, I'm emo too. Like, because I mean, I feel like so much of what we see on social media is a construct, and everyone shows you the best parts of their lives. For the most part, there are some people out there, you know, whether they're body positivity advocates or mental health advocates, that are like, no, like this is the real part of what it is to be human. And it's dark and it's ugly and it's smelly and it's sweaty and it's hairy and it's whatever, you know what I mean? But, but like, we see this construct of everything's so glamorous and beautiful and funny and perfect. And it's just like comparison syndrome. Why is my life not like that? I'm sad, or I'm afraid. I'm afraid to take that chance. I'm afraid to chase my dream. I'm afraid to tell that person that I have a crush on them. I'm afraid to, you know, apply to that school or whatever the case is. And it's like, we're all living in fear. We're all living with fear and anger and sadness and resentment and envy, but we're also all living with moments of joy and friendship and laughter and love. And we don't get the full picture in the glimpses that we get into people's lives in our world right now.
Yeah. And I think especially in a creative field, you know what? Not even creative, just in life in general. Like people want you to see the best parts of their life, especially on social media. And not, maybe there are some people who are like, I want other people to be jealous. Sure. Maybe. That aside, I think it's like this need to prove like I'm okay, or I'm where people think I should be. Like, it is a way to gain external affirmation or external approval and acceptance. And it makes, like, we all fucking do it, right? Like,
yeah.
But it does, when you feel like maybe like any success or anything that's going well in your life, you're like, oh, this isn't anything to brag about. And then you're on your feed and you're seeing people who are like, my first red carpet or whatever. It's so easy to be like, well, I'm not doing that, so like, I'm not going to share what I'm doing. And you don't really know if those people are happy or not. It's again, it's that like, let me get approval. It's so fucked up.
I know. Well, I've taken, during our break, I've taken some time to really, I haven't been posting to our Instagram. I've barely been posting to any of my other millions of accounts that I have. I haven't been scrolling through as much. Like, I made myself a promise. If I'm not logging in to post something or connect with someone, like message or comment with someone, I'm not going to allot my time, my very limited, precious resource of time, to scrolling through and feeling horrible about myself.
Yeah.
And so that's like one of the things that during this break, I really committed myself to doing. The other thing is like feeling my feelings and exploring my emotions, which is nothing I was ever interested in my entire life. It's something I avoided at all cost. And now I'm like, no, I am a human being. I have feelings. As much as I tried to be cerebral and in my head and in my brain and deny it and think I was some like superior extraterrestrial evolved species, like, I'm a human. I have cried a lot during our hiatus. And one of the things that it was the most powerful that made me cry a lot was, so Brené Brown, Mm-hmm. I love Brené Brown. We love Brené Brown.
Yes.
She has a new book called Atlas of the Heart, where her research and research from other emotional researchers, emotional scientists in, or emotions scientists in the industry, have narrowed down that we have 78 emotions as a species. We know how to identify at any given point when we're feeling a feeling, mm-hmm. only three of them. Happy, sad, pissed off. So the other 75 elude us completely. Like, we don't know how to, like, be able to in the moment say, like, oh, I'm not jealous, I'm envious or whatever. And if you're like, I'm not a big reader or 78 is too many, there is an HBO Max series. If you love her TED Talks, I've been watching the HBO Max show and it's her talking to a crowd. She goes through 30 of the emotions and it's 5 episodes. And there are 2 that I want to talk about. One is she talks about the difference between jealousy and envy. And she talks about plain envy and malicious envy. And I feel like this is like social media in a nutshell. So plain envy, well, jealousy is like 3 or more people, right? So like, say you and I were hanging out, we mm-hmm. went to get a coffee, you bumped into a friend or an acquaintance or whatever, and you were like, you should come join us for coffee. If I felt jealousy, it's because I was like, this is my time with Lex, who is this interloper? Like, And envy is like, say you went to Italy and you didn't take me with you. And you were sending me all these pictures of like, look, I'm on a boat in Venice. And so like, I could either feel plain envy, which is, oh man, like, I wish I could do that. Like, I wish that was me. And that's just like, I'm happy for you. That's great. That looks fun. But I kind of wish like I could do that. Mm-hmm. And malicious envy is like, you fucking bitch, I'm going to fly to Italy and I'm going to drown your ass in the Venice Canal because you do not deserve it. I deserve it. And that's obviously like a very intense thing. But I feel like that's what we see when we go on social media is like, sometimes we look and we're like, oh great, like this person is on a beach and looking gorgeous with like her beautiful body and her friends and her boyfriend and like all of these things. And sometimes it's like, ugh, like, why can't I have that body? Why can't I be on a beach right now? Like, oh, yeah. Oh. And oftentimes like haters, like that's where that comes from. So I feel like that's not a healthy place to live in.
No. It's absolutely
so. So I've been like, since watching that and learning about that, I'm like, okay, screw this. I am not going to interact on social media unless I'm proactively like using it to connect with people or to share something about myself. Mm-hmm. I refuse to feel malicious envy anymore.
Hell yeah.
Anymore.
I love that.
And then the other thing that like really struck me, I mean, the whole series is really good, but the other thing that struck me was, anxiety and overwhelm. I believe those are the two that she like pairs together. And she's like, anxiety is when you're like people use them in the wrong way. And oftentimes when you are able to put a name to your emotion, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? So if you say like, yeah, yeah. And so this is the case that most people feel and sometimes misuse the word. So when you're feeling anxious, which she's like, anxious can be like, it could be a trait, like you could be just a more anxious person, or it could be a state, which is like, I feel anxiety right now.
Mm.
So like, it could be different, but anxiety is basically like, or anxiousness is basically like, there's a lot going on and I'm like feeling really like stressed out and I just like need help. I need assistance. I need support. I need love. You know, you need something, but you're still functioning. You're still there. You're still present. Overwhelm is your nervous system shuts down because you have too much coming at you. And when you're overwhelmed, and I feel like this, she talks about like, this is the word that everyone misuses because they're like, oh, I'm overwhelmed. Like there's too much going on. When you're overwhelmed, like your nervous system essentially is just like self-preservation mode. That's when you make bad decisions. And she said the only remedy for overwhelmed is nothingness, which is a word that I threw at you earlier. So 10 to 15 minutes where you literally do nothing just to get your nervous system to regulate itself. And then you can go back and like figure out what you need to do or what you need in that moment.
Yeah.
But our gut instinct is like, oh, I'm like anxious or, oh, I'm overwhelmed. Like I need to like get back to a normalized place or self-regulate. When in reality, like being able to determine between anxiety or anxiousness and overwhelm can really help you decide, do I need to push through? Do I need to ask for help? Or do I need to just sit on the couch and just stare at a wall for 10 minutes and just let my nervous system like get out of fight or flight?
Yeah.
And she's like, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because since people overuse the word overwhelm, because they don't think it's such an intense reaction that their nervous system goes through, it then becomes like, oh, I'm so overwhelmed. That's just saying that or putting that name on it signals to the brain and the nervous system, like red alert, shut it down. And so you, if you weren't overwhelmed, if you were just anxious and you said, I'm overwhelmed, you now are overwhelmed and your body does shut down and you need to do nothingness or else you will make decisions that will potentially be self-sabotaging. Yep. Or, you know, you think they're self-preservational, but they're self-sabotaging. So
damn.
That's what I've learned on our hiatus. What have you learned? I was just telling you, we had a little snafu. We stopped recording and now we're starting.
So many technical issues.
I'm sure there's something about some planet aligned somewhere. I'm not well versed enough. Chanel would know. Shout out Wayfinder's Path, who recently rebooted her YouTube channel and it's amazing.
Yeah, and just had a birthday.
S, happy birthday, Aries Queen.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, but I don't remember what I was saying. Anyway, technical issues. Neti Potts, we talked about briefly. We were talking about Brené Brown. Yes. I am very congested, breathing through my mouth, just trying to rush along. And asked you what you learned. And then instead, I'm going to, you know, I'm just going to shut up for a little bit and let you get a word in edgewise. How about that?
That's fine because my mic disconnected and I was like, please don't ask me a question. Like, it's going to sound like shit.
More than a year doing this and we're still fucking up. It's part of the process.
Hey, baby.
Part of the process.
Yeah. So what I learned, so I got to go on like a really nice little trip with my brother. So I've talked about my brother on this podcast a bit before. He's 14 and a half years older than me. So a really big age gap. And we went to Arizona and we got to like, he told me about his childhood and as growing up as a teenager in Arizona when I was a baby, which I like don't remember. And it was just really fun. And what it's done is it's like kind of caused me to go back through especially like my teenage years, which I've sort of avoided for a really long time. Like y'all know, I love to talk about therapy. I love to talk about like, oh, like this thing I learned, my emotions, blah, blah, blah. I have been avoiding like thinking about and processing from the ages of like 11 to maybe 22 forever. And so I've started to do that and I've started to kind of take the lid off of things and thankfully talking to my therapist about it and like slowly pulling things out and working through it. But I think the biggest thing that I've learned is like you can't keep running away from those feelings and those moments because there's a lot of shit there that like helps you understand why you make the decisions that you do now as an adult. Like, yes. The things that we're starting to get into is helping me understand, like, because so many people have asked me, like, you want to be an actor, you're really good at it. Like, why do you keep, like, putting it off? Do you not really want to do it? Do you not really want, like, XYZ thing? Like, what is it about? Blah, blah, blah. And so those are conversations that I'm having with my therapist and we're starting to, like, peel layers back. And she's like, yeah, of course, like, you would have a hard time seeing yourself in that world when you grew up hearing these things. Like, really unpacking a lot of shit. But what I'm learning too is like, especially for someone who's not here anymore, you can love them very deeply and realize all of the great things that they did for you and still be very angry and disappointed in other things that they did or didn't do. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that you love them any less. It doesn't mean that they're a bad person. It just means that they were a person existing in the world the only way that they knew how. So right now there's been a lot of like, I've been feeling a lot of frustration and anger about certain things from my past. And I think now I'm in a much healthier place where I can like feel it, acknowledge it, and also let it go pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And so it's just been really helpful in terms of like, you know, figuring out like, why do I have such a hard time with the idea of rejection? Like, where does that stem from? What is that about? Like, how do you move through that? How do you process that?
Yeah.
And just really focusing on the idea of like, people can be really great and wonderful and instill really wonderful values and also like tear you down in ways that they don't realize and that you didn't realize either. So that's one. And then the other one that kind of hit, was it yesterday? More recently, was I just finished reading The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, which like I have mixed feelings about. I think there's a lot of really wonderful things in the book. This is just a preface if you're thinking about reading it. Like there is some really wonderful stuff in that book. I think his writing style is kind of shitty. Like it's not even shitty. It's just like,
it's aggressive. I listened to the audiobook and it's very aggressive.
It's just like, it's super tough aggressive, love. but it's not, to me, it's not even that. It's like, oh yeah, could you imagine if you're banging two chicks? And it's like, bro, you don't have to be a bro about it. Like, it's weird. It's like very heartfelt at parts. And then suddenly it's like, let me remind you that I'm a guy. And I'm like, ew, what? Shut up. I was like having a nice time. Anyway, so I'm just going to preface that. But Mark Manson, are you listening? But there is a part towards the end where it talks about toxic people in relationships. And this can be friendships. This can be romantic, whatever, familial. And how generally when there is a toxic relationship, there's two roles that people tend to fall into. There's the, I don't think he called it the victim, but it's the person who like wants everybody else to solve their problems and makes their problems other people's problems versus the savior or the saver. And that's the person who feels like they have to fix everybody's problems, because if they don't, then will people see any value in them? Like that's how they gain value. That's how they gain acceptance. And
is that you?
That's me. And that, and so reading that, and like I've definitely gotten much better about it in more recent years. Like I've, you know, I had a manager tell me like, look, like just think about, you know, what things can you control? Like, did you do everything that you were responsible for doing, things that were the tasks that you were supposed to do? If the answer is yes, then that's all you can do. Like anything outside of that is not your responsibility. It's not your business to solve. And I was like, okay. And that's been really helpful. And I've like applied that to even friendships as well and personal relationships. But realizing like I very much was that person and still tend to be, like if somebody is having a hard time, I will be like, oh my God, I have to fix this. And so I will generally, like now I'll ask like, do you want advice or do you just want me to listen? And a lot of times people are like, I just want to vent. I'm like, cool. Like, but it was eye-opening to read it and realize like, that's me. Like, and to have the self-awareness now that I think comes from therapy of being able to go, oh shit, that's me. I do that. And then acknowledging it, accepting it and going, okay, well, how do I stop doing that? Like, how do I stop trying to fix other people's problems? Cause it's, I can't like, I can support people in the journey to them changing something, but like, I have my own shit I got to take care of. Like, I can't fix anybody else's shit.
Yes.
Like, that I don't have time. Like, and it, you know, and I think doing that, like for me comes from like the household that I grew up in, like, we were very poor, and my mom worked really hard, and sometimes our living situations, we had roommates or something, and so it was like survival mode of keep the peace, mediate, like, how do I make myself smaller so that way we don't wind up in an unfortunate situation? Like, how do you do that? And when you learn that as a kid, like, of course you keep carrying that with you all the way through adulthood. And that's what I mean. Like, if there's a part of your life, like, I'm realizing now my teenage years are really, most of my teenage years were spent doing that, like trying to mediate, trying to be a peacekeeper for adults. Like, they were adults. Like, that's their own goddamn thing. Like, it's not my responsibility to do that. But that's what I mean of, like, if there's a section of your life that you're like, nope, I don't want to unpack that. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to talk about it. I'm scared to look at it. If right now you don't have, you feel like you don't have the tools or the support to be able to unpack that, don't, because it can be really hard.
Yeah.
When you are ready, you have to face it, because you're going to realize there's a lot of shit there that informs who you are now and the decisions that you make now. And for me, it's like kind of, it feels like, I don't know, it feels like molting a little bit, like shedding snake skin. And it's hard and it's difficult and it's scary, but it's also really encouraging, because I know now, like, the more I keep this at the front of my mind and realize those bad habits that I have, the more I can break them and the better I will be for it. And the more I can keep moving forward and accomplish the shit that I want to do with my life. Cause I've got this one, like, that's it. I've got this one.
Yeah.
So that's what I've learned.
I've taken up a new kind of title mantle recently, and it's recovering people pleaser.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Because I feel like same thing. Like, it was very much like part of it was my immigrant journey and my immigrant family. And it was like, make yourself small, like, be ambitious, but be ambitious within the limits of safety, you know, like, do as much as you can and thrive and succeed, but do it within a space that doesn't make you a threat to other people. And so I grew up being very much a people pleaser and being like afraid to ask for what I want. And I'm in no way, shape or form in a space now after a few months of work to be like, oh yeah, no, I'm good. I'm like, fuck everybody else. Like, I'm still very much, I still struggle with asking for what I want. And when I do, I'm immediately go to like, I mean, like, is that okay? Like, are you sure that's okay? And so I'm trying to not do that. And it's hard because it feels like, it kind of feels binary. It kind of feels black and white of like, if I'm not really nice and overly sensitive about asking for my needs or setting boundaries, then I'm being a straight up bitch or a cunt, or I'm too aggressive or I'm too direct. And it's just like, well, how do I like mediate? How do I like cut to the middle? And how do I like ask for what I want, but don't do it in a way that's like too direct or too bitchy? And so I'm like, I say I'm recovering because there are people that I really love and hold dear and care for that I like still am kind of like, I don't want to step on toes. I don't want you to think that I don't appreciate you. But everyone else, I'm kind of like, fuck it. Like, if I have to choose between one or the other, if it really truly is like, I cannot live in the gray, I can't cut the difference, then fuck it. I'm going to be direct, because I would much rather stand up for myself than someone that I don't know or don't care about or don't have that relationship with. And ultimately, like, it's up to that person to tell me if I've crossed a line or hurt their feelings. Like, that's not my responsibility to try and I feel like that's something that what you were just saying, and that really resonates with me, is we would try to predict what people's reactions would be or what kind of mood they're in. And so it's like, oh, I really like, you know, just a random example, right? Like, oh, I really want to go to this camp. Let me approach my parent or my guardian and like be like, like really pitch, like, I'm passionate about this. I really want to go to this camp. I know it's expensive, but like, please, please, please. And then you see your parent or guardian, and maybe they had a stressful day at work and they're like on edge, and maybe they're like yelling, or maybe you just get a sense of their energy without them even saying anything. And you're like, oh, okay, now is not the right time for me to ask for what I want. And then the right time never comes along, and the summer comes and goes.
Yeah.
And multiple summers come and go, and you never ended up going to the camp that you always wanted to go to. Oh. So it's just like, it's hard. And I feel like a lot of people specifically in our generation are like that. I have Masterclass. I'm a subscriber to Masterclass. I really like it. Nice. And I'm doing RuPaul's right now.
Ooh.
Yes. RuPaul has one on self-love and living authentically.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that he said was, when you have a thought, it's really important. It's hard work, but it's very important to ask yourself, where is this thought coming from? And if you're able to say like, oh, that's not my thought, like that thought came from a parent or a grandparent or a friend or like whoever, you're able to then say like, okay, that's not my thought.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let it go. And if you think, where is this coming from? And it is coming from you, you own that thought. So then it's up to you to decide, do I still believe in that? Mm-hmm. Or do I believe in something different? And he was specifically talking about like doing, going on stage and doing like a David Bowie androgynous type of performance.
Mm-hmm.
And he had already been doing drag, but he had decided to do this androgynous performance instead because he thought there's no way that like my drag glamazon self would be successful or like would be a right fit or whatever. And then he was like, I had to stop and think, like, whose thought is that? And then I realized, oh, that's my thought. And then I thought, like, where did that come from? Why did I start believing that? And once I realized that I didn't believe it anymore and I wanted to choose something different, that was one of the first steps on my journey to be who I am today, was when I was like, okay, no, I choose to believe something different.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's hard. Cool. It's fucking hard work though, dude.
Yeah. Well, because you have to be like, you have to be self-aware.
Yes.
And you have to be fully present all the time. And that's hard.
It is hard, but it's also a tightrope walk, right? Because you have to be present and you have to be self-aware, but you can't get so introspective that you're then trapped and overanalyzing every thought and you all of this time that you could have spent like going to the open mic and trying out that material. Mm-hmm. Instead, you've been sitting there and thinking about all of the reasons why you should or you shouldn't, and you've talked yourself into or out of it. Like, so it's, I hate it so much that life is about balance, but it truly is. But and I've had so many people tell me that. And I'm like, yeah, no, theoretically, like it totally makes sense. Again, with like the theoretical learning versus experiential learning.
Yeah.
But now that I'm trying to put it into practice, it fucking sucks. It fucking sucks because before you're able to find a balance, I'll speak for myself. I'm not balanced. I am unhinged all the time. But before, I used to very much like live in one space. Like I would live on one extreme and then maybe I would find my way to another extreme in a few weeks or whatever, or like I would just struggle with it. Now, I will swing from one extreme to the other multiple times in a day, trying to find that balance. And so I consider that progress, you know? It's hard in the moment because in the moment I want to beat myself up and I want to be like, oh my God, like I feel so much rage and then I feel joy and then I like feel all these things all happening within the scope of one day. But already I'm lessening the time that I'm moving between the two extremes, which means I'm getting closer to the middle, closer to that living in the gray. And so I just have to keep going. It's fucking hard though. No wonder people don't want to do this work. No wonder as a recovering hater, no wonder there are so many haters. No, like this is the work. We think like we're put on this earth to have a family or have friends or have children or, you know, make money, become famous, have a career, like whatever. We're put on this earth to get to know ourselves and to be the version of ourselves that we're the most proud of. That's the work. And that is the hardest work. I'm finding it's beautiful. Fucking stressful. Don't
no, but it is I'm what you're cry. Saying. Like that, like the reason we're here is to become the best version of ourselves and to discover that. Like,
yeah,
I think that's
and we I sabotage ourselves all the time.
Yeah,
all the time.
Yeah,
I want to read an Elizabeth Gilbert quote that I was yes. trying to find while you were speaking, and I found it, and ooh. I just want to say it. And then maybe just have it land for a moment, if you will allow okay. me to. Okay, so yeah. Elizabeth Gilbert, the author of Eat, Pray, Love, Big Magic, a lot of really incredible books. Mm-hmm. Okay. You are afraid of surrender because you don't want to lose control. But you never had control. All you had was anxiety. Fuck me up, why don't you, Lizzie?
Get off my neck. Oh, my God.
100 P.
No P. yeah. Oh, man. That, I think there was something like that in The Subtle Art of, like, we try so hard to keep our reality the way that we want it to be that we mm-hmm. don't ever step. Like it, when you step back and realize how it actually is, like that's where growth comes from. And it's when yes. you kind of just let go of it, that's actually when more things start to happen for you. Like I had, yeah. I think I've told you this story, but the first time I went to New York with Bobby, a friend of mine was like, oh, have you ever been? And I was like, no. And he was like, look, like the city is a place where if you have a plan for the night, and shit keeps going the wrong way, stop trying to fight it. Let the city yeah. take you where it wants to. Like, yep. it's going to take you on a different journey, and you just have to kind of go with it. And
yeah.
that happened.
Yes.
We were trying to get to a show. It just kept not working. It was shitty.
Yeah.
But eventually we started laughing about it and we're like, okay, let's just see what happens. And then I got to see a friend that I hadn't seen in a few years. Yep. Like we had a really wonderful night. It was amazing. So it's like, and I always think about that in terms of life as well. And I will say, I still try kind of hard of like, okay, but like, let me hold on to this yeah. idea. But the older I'm getting, the more I'm like, let me see what just happens when I yeah. let go and where do you wind up? And a lot of yeah. times I think it really is you wind up in a place that maybe is the place that you wanted to be. It just took you in a different route.
Yeah.
Or it takes you somewhere amazing that you never thought possible.
It's also about perspective because mm-hmm. because I grew up in New York and that was the hardest part for me moving to California mm-hmm. was in New York, you literally could go take a step outside mm-hmm. and just let your life, like let go and let your life be decided. Maybe a friend is like last minute, let's grab drinks. Maybe you get a whiff of like a pop-up show that's happening or like a speakeasy yeah. that's opening or, and that's what I loved about New York was the spontaneity and the access that everyone had to each other. Mm-hmm. And when I moved to California, it's anyone that like, especially in LA, like everyone will know, like you have to make plans and those plans have to be within a certain radius of overlap where each person wants to drive. It has to be on the same side of the 405. It has to be at a certain time at a certain place. And then eventually the person might flake anyway. And so mm-hmm. there was like so much more construct around making plans and seeing people and doing things.
Yeah.
And I hated it and it sucked so much. And I was alone a lot because of that, because I remember the very first day I lived in Hollywood. I worked in West Hollywood. It was the first day you and I met. I walked to work. Behind the Dolby Theater to
oh my God.
Mel's Diner on Sunset, if anyone yeah. knows what that is, I walked that distance and it was That's nothing for walk. Me. Yeah. It was nothing because New York, I would put my headphones in and I would walk from like Columbus Circle to like downtown Financial District just to clear my head. And it like you would bump into people, you would see people. And I remember walking into the office that very first day and telling people like, yeah, it was such a nice walk. Like it was sunny. I bumped into some people. People say hello, good morning to you here, which they don't do in New York. They always think you're trying to get them to like sign a Greenpeace petition or be swindled or whatever. And I remember the horror with which you and everyone else looked at me like, you walked? We don't do that here. This is LA. We don't walk. And now, let me tell you, the other day, even though I'm in Northern California now, I stepped out of Target, looked across the plaza, saw Chipotle, and I was like, should I go to Chipotle? I haven't had Chipotle in a while. Should I go to Chipotle? And seriously thought about it for a second. Then I was like, okay. Got in my car and drove the fucking 20 feet to Chipotle. Like I could see it. And I was like, I should go. I could walk over there. And I drove 20 feet. Like this is my progress. But yeah, I think it's also about perspective. Like that was one of my favorite things of living in New York was you can let the city just guide you. And I missed that when I moved to California. And so it's interesting to hear someone's perspective, like when you flip it.
Yeah. I think it is like, it's just a, like, you're right. It's a city that you can kind of get swept up in. Mm-hmm. It's funny. Cause like in LA, like I love walking and it was funny when Nick and I went to Arizona, we started in one location and then we walked like all over. I think we walked like 11 miles or something in one day. Yeah. And he kept asking like, oh, do you mind if we walk? And I was like, no, I love walking. And I was like, oh, this is where I get it from. And it's also my brother's 6'4". I'm 5'6". I was a very small child when, and he's been 6'4" basically since I was a baby. But I walk really fast. And when we were walking together, I was walking at my like faster speed. And I was like, oh, this is why I have to walk so fast. Like he's so tall. I've always had to like strides. Basically run to keep up. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that like, I don't know, just like walking is such a nice way to one, get out of your head, but two, kind of see like where the city pulls you. And I'll do that sometimes in LA. It's been a little bit since I've done that, but like during the pandemic, well, we're still technically in it. But I would like walk all over the place. And a few years ago, pre-pandemic, I walked to the nearest Trader Joe's, which is like a 40-minute walk from where I live. And Chris, to this day, is like, oh, just a short 40-minute walk, just a quick 40-minute walk. And I'm like, look, it was a really nice walk there. And I took a lift back. Like I wasn't about to walk home with all my groceries. Jesus. Yeah. But yeah, it's not a thing where you really do in LA. Like people look at you like you're insane. If you're like, oh yeah, I walked a couple miles. I'm like, what? Why? What's wrong with you?
It's nothing. It's delightful. It helps you clear your head. Like now that I have a dog, favorite activity is going on our 5 o'clock walks. We go outside. The sun is still out, but it's cooler. We say hi to all the neighbors. We just like, and I'm able to experience the neighborhood through his experience. And like, I used to, in the beginning, get very frustrated of, oh, do you have to stop and smell every like flower? And now I'm like, you know what, boo, you stop and smell the flowers. Life's too short. Yeah. You do that, you know? And sometimes I'll get down there and smell them with him. Cute. Not often, but sometimes.
Just crouch down on his level.
Sniffing. Yeah, and they smell like dog pee. So there's that for you.
Well, maybe smell the flowers a little bit above him if you can.
Yeah. Whiffs. So we've done some growth during our hiatus, some introspection, some learning that I hope we will both continue. But we also learned something about where we want to take this show. So this show started out as a very chaotic, let's throw all of this, not only spaghetti, but penne and rigatoni and fusilli and lasagna.
A couple hamburgers.
Sheets of lasagna. Just like
a cannoli.
Okay, I would never throw a cannoli. That is the best dessert of all time. I am still on the hunt for the best cannoli. It is,
Have you been to my favorite dessert. Mike's in Boston?
No.
No. We should take a trip to Boston and go. It's pretty
good. Can we just go on a road trip to find the best cannoli in America? Can someone pay us to do this and put it on the Food Network?
Oh my God.
Please. I would love that. Yes. Ooh. We need a road trip show, I think. Like a Somebody Feed Phil or like those kind of, like, we need that. Just pay me to travel around the country and or the world eating and having orgasmic experiences with food. Like, not literally, but maybe.
No, you never know. Yeah. You might. I'm not going to judge you.
So we were, I know you never do, and I love that about you. We were just throwing everything, trying to see what stuck, what resonated, what felt good, what we wanted to, what filled us with passion, but also what we wanted to kind of put out into the world, because we want to put out something of value. We don't want to just, like, any bozo can grab a mic or even the voice memos app on their phone and just like talk and talk about stupid shit. And we know this because there are men out there doing this who Drew on TikTok is eviscerating. Shout out, Drew. You are the, bow down to Drew.
Queen.
Queen. But we wanted to, and we still want to, create something that, you know, shares, is vulnerable, shares stories, talks about what it is to be human in this world. And we've narrowed it down to vulnerable conversations with creatives. And now that we have gotten to know ourselves more and what we want to do in this world and the passions that we've always had that now seem even more clear to us that we want to pursue as our life dreams and life goals, we have further refined the peony. So, Lex, moving forward, what can our listeners expect from us?
So moving forward, we are still going to be having vulnerable conversations, specifically with creatives in television, film, and theater. We've had a lot of people on the podcast already who fit into that. Part of it is, you know, Julia and I, like, I've been acting since I was a kid. Julia has had this passion for writing and is now kicking ass and becoming a screenwriter. And this is the, you know, we watch a lot of television, a lot of films. Like, this is the world that we love to inhabit. And we have a lot of friends and people we know who exist in this world as well, and they're such a wealth of knowledge. So that's where we're moving to.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like people love to, like, that kind of media, film, TV, specifically, we look at these celebrities, right? Whether it's director, writer, actor, whatever the case is. And we look at them and we're like, that's so cool. Like, they're a famous person making movies, and like, how amazing. And I just, you know, like, one of our favorite things, I think, as people who love, not just you and me, but just anyone who loves movies or TV or theater, is hearing stories about people who overcame hardship to make it and have their big breaks.
Yeah.
Because that's how it is. Oftentimes it won't be. It's not like modeling where someone scouts you at a mall, you know? Yeah. Oftentimes, like, Idris Elba lived in his car for a long time and considered quitting, and now he's Idris Elba. Yeah. Ridley Scott didn't make his, he wanted to be a painter, and it just wasn't, he took it very seriously. And then he ended up making his very first film at the age of 40, and now he's Ridley fucking Scott, everybody. Yeah. So I just think it would be super cool, and you and I have talked about this, about like people on different parts of their journey, whether they're just starting out, whether they've been struggling for years, whether they're just getting their breaks, whether they are big and already kind of working in the industry, getting to know them and talk to them and hear their stories and lessons they've learned and lessons they could impart to our listeners and us, because mm-hmm. There's always like a dash of selfishness that we do all of our episodes with. And I think it's cool, not only like actors and writers and directors, but also, you know, whoever else, other roles, yeah. maybe some crew roles, you know?
Yeah. Casting associates, yeah. You know, lighting, like all of that.
How many people have started as PAs and they have horror stories? And I have some friends who I've interviewed on the Makeup Artist Chronicle who are makeup artists and hairstylists in the like working in Hollywood right mm-hmm. now, and they have some really fun stories. So I'm excited.
Me too. And it's also, I think it's wonderful because sort of what you were saying, it's like, especially when you have this dream of getting into the entertainment industry or the music industry, right? It's like a very, people make it sound like it's a very linear path of mm-hmm. hone your skill, get an agent, go on auditions, profit. Like that's not how it works at all in any regard. And it's not a clear cut path and it looks different for everybody. And there isn't a rule book for it. And if your path doesn't look like what you're told it's supposed to look like, that's okay. Yeah. Like, your journey is yours and yours alone. And there's no reason to beat yourself up because it looks different than the people around you or the people that you look up to. Like, just keep going. And so that's one of the things that I'm really excited about is to hear how, you know, people who maybe have a similar, you know, maybe they're on television shows together, but everybody's going to have a different way of how they got there.
The people who made it are the ones that didn't quit. Like eventually, I feel like the universe, whatever it is you want to do in your life that you're truly passionate about, yes, there are some industries that are a little more competitive. And yes, maybe you want to be a storyteller. Like maybe you want to write movies and maybe you just want to do it out of passion. Maybe you don't want that to be your career. That's fine too. But ultimately, I think the universe gives us obstacles in whatever, like, even if it's our, you know, self-care journey, right? Because there have been so many times where I thought like, oh my God, I'm making progress. Like, I love myself. And then something will happen and I'll just be like, you're fucking worthless. And then I'm like, oh, no, we're not going to do that. Yeah. And there are always setbacks. There are always obstacles. And oftentimes it's just like, how much can you handle and stick out because your passion outweighs that hardship and what you're willing to put yourself through. I mean, being alive in itself is masochistic if you are truly living your life.
Yeah, it's weird. You guys, what we're doing is weird. Like the whole fucking thing from beginning to end is fucking weird. Like
RuPaul says that it's all an illusion. It's all an illusion. He says life is an illusion. So why not have fun with it and make it the illusion that you want it to be?
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Why the fuck not?
If we could somehow, in some universe, get RuPaul on program and just sit down and talk to him, like, I think I would probably either scream the entire time, like squeal scream the entire time, or be completely incapacitated. Just like...
Are you sweating like right now thinking about it?
I'm sweating and every single crevice of my body is just dripping with perspiration. It's just like Kristen Wiig in that like character that she did on SNL with the sweater where she's like, oh, I'm so excited.
I love that character so much.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. So welcome back, Lex. Welcome Happy back, to Julia. Have you. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Happy to be here too. And here's to some more episodes and another year and another few years of us just selfishly talking to people about what are your darkest moments and how have you overcome them to be an amazing actor, storyteller, writer, etc.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Do we have an air horn? Do we have an air horn sound effect?
I don't know.
Do we not? I'm going to have to add one, I think.
Air horn.
No, we don't. I'm going to add one. I'm going to add one for the next time.
There you go. That's as close as we can get. All right, everybody. Remember that you can like, follow, subscribe at the Peony Podcast on all platforms. Yes. Please rate and review 5 stars, please.
Please.
And,
thank you.
Yeah,
happy to be back.
We missed you guys. Aw.
Bye.
Bye.
Ha 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 ha.